by a factor of 10.
Hmm, said the chief. Miyoko thought he was trying to hide the fact that he did not know what a rat was, nor how dangerous it could be.
When the flare's plasma cloud arrives, however, she went on, the radiation will increase to more than 1,000 rads in a few hours, worse than the radiation dose at Hiroshima.
That startled the chief. Worse than Hiroshima?
Yes.
But the first pulse is not so bad?
The surface crews can be brought inside after the first pulse hits, Miyoko said again.
We have a full hour before the heavy radiation builds up?
At least an hour, sir.
She hesitated a moment, struggling with her own conscience, then added,
In truth, sir, we have no way of knowing whether the heavy radiation will strike us at all, even after the flare bursts forth. The plasma cloud that carries the radiation may miss us entirely.
Miss us entirely? Is that possible?
Yes, sir. But we have no way of predicting that quickly enough to save men working on the surface. That is why we must get them all inside once the flare erupts.
The chief sat muttering to himself for several moments.
Then a slow smile of understanding spread across his normally scowling features.
This is like predicting the path of a typhoon, isn't it? You know the storm is approaching, but you cannot tell exactly where it will strike.
Yes, sir,
Miyoko jumped at his analogy, feeling a rush of relief.
Very much like a typhoon. An invisible typhoon that cannot be felt, but can kill a person just as swiftly.
Mount Wasser.
What's the latest word on this flare? Brennard asked.
Killifer pushed his little wheelchair slightly away from the comm console.
No word. The flare hasn't appeared yet.
The two men were alone in the comm cubicle. Brennard was on his feet, towering over the seated Killifer. Every other member of the expedition was out digging, even the ostensible communications technician. Brennard knew the mission schedule was in a shambles, but he would sort that out and get things going properly again as soon as this flare threat was over.
What does Moonbase say about it? He asked Killifer.
His aide made a sour face.
They say the flare ought to have popped by now. Could pop any minute. They just don't know. With that and $5, I could buy a cup of coffee.
They also say, Killifer added caustically, that their regular astronomer is here in the boondocks with us instead of at her instruments at the base. Brennard glowered.
That was Stavanger's idea, bringing her along with us.
Killifer said nothing, but his sardonic smile spoke volumes.
We can't just sit here and wait for a flare that might not even happen, Brennard muttered.
Nodding, Killifer said, Oh, by the way, Moonbase reported that Yamagata sent up a recce satellite 6 hours ago. It's in a very eccentric polar orbit.
With its longest dwell time right over us, Brennard guessed.
Right.
Damn. They'll be sending a team down here to make a claim on the mountain before we can.
I don't see how.
They could drop a kamikaze crew on the other side of the mountain and use hoppers to get up to the top,
Brennard growled angrily.
Stick a sheet of solar panels up there and claim first use. Then we're screwed.
But aren't they just as worried about the flare as we are? Brennard looked down at his aide with a withering expression.
You don't know what kamikaze means, do you?
Something from history, isn't it? Last century?
Right. History.
Killifer sat on the uncomfortable little chair and craned his neck to look up at his boss. Brennard liked to be known for making decisions, but now he seemed hesitant, caught on the horns of a dilemma, hung up with uncertainty.
If only we knew when the flare will erupt, he muttered, kneading his right fist into the palm of his left hand.
Or if it will erupt at all, Killifer suggested. Brennard whirled on him.
If? You think the whole thing might be a false alarm?
I don't know. I'm not an astronomer.
The goddamned astronomer's out here digging ditches instead of at her post with her instruments.
Killifer shrugged.
Dougie wanted her along. The flare should have erupted by now, if there's going to be one, Brennard thought out loud.
Even if the flare does come, isn't there a couple of hours before radiation gets really serious? Killifer knew the answer to his question.
Yes, that's right, Brennard said.
Enough time to get down off the mountain using our hoppers?
Brennard stopped his frustrated kneading and sat on the chair next to his aide. We could jump up to the summit of Mount Wasser, plant the flag and start the nanobugs working on the power tower, and get down again before the radiation buildup ever begins.
Christ, that's brilliant, Killifer said.
I'm going to suit up, Brennard said.
You?
I can't ask my people to do something that I'm not prepared to do myself. I take the same risks they do.
Yeah, but
how many people will we need for a dash to the summit?
Killifer swiveled his chair to the screen and tapped on the keyboard. Mission plan calls for 6.
Strip it down. How many do we actually need?
Studying the list on the screen, Killifer said, 2 to handle the nanobugs, 1 to pilot the hopper.
Martin and Greenberg are the nanotechs, Brennard said.
Thinking swiftly, Killifer said, Maybe we ought to leave one of them here. No sense taking both of them up to the summit.
One person can't physically handle the task, Brennard objected.
All you need is an extra pair of hands. A warm body will do. Either Greenberg or Martin can direct the warm body, and you haven't risked both your nanotechs.
Brennard pondered it for all of 3 seconds.
Right. I'll take Greenberg. He's the more experienced of the two. Who can we spare to help him?
The astronomer, Killifer suggested.
Put her to some useful work, Brennard muttered.
You ought to take Stavanger, too, Killifer pointed out. Let him make a legal record of the claim.
Perfect.
Killifer stayed in the comm cubicle as Brennard marched off to the airlock where the spacesuits were stored.
With a little luck, he said to himself, they'll all break their friggin' necks.
Doug felt excited when Brennard came out and told him they were making a dash to the summit of Mount Wasser. He had been spraying plastic sealant along the tunnel walls just dug out by the others. The sealant made the tunnel airtight. It was dull and clumsy work inside his spacesuit with no light except for his helmet lamp. The sealant was doped with a weakly glowing phosphor so that any gaps in its application could be easily seen. It was the safest job Brennard could find for him. The more experienced expedition members were handling the flammable aluminum-oxygen propellant mixture out on the surface, desperately working to break up the rock-hard ground enough to allow the tractors to scoop it up and dump it on the shelters and tunnels. Scrambling out of the tunnel at Brennard's command, Doug checked the equipment pouches on his belt, while 2 of the other expedition members topped off his oxygen tank from the supply on the undamaged cargo ship. Yes, the miniature VidCam was there. Doug pulled it out and checked that its battery was fully charged. Not that he had used it, digging tunnels and sealing them. He was surprised to see a short, stocky, space-suited figure join Brennard and Greenberg. Sure enough, the name stenciled on the chest of her suit was Rhee.
"We're making a dash to the summit,"
Brennard told them as they lifted the spindly-legged little hopper from its hold in the cargo ship.
"Rhee, you assist Greenberg here. I'll pilot the hopper."
"What's my assignment?" Doug asked.
"Official record keeper," said Brennard, "unless you know how to handle a hopper."
"Why is he so hostile to me?" Doug asked himself.
Aloud, he replied, "I've never actually flown one, but I've put in a lot of hours in simulators." "Fine," Brennard snapped. "You can be my co-pilot. Just don't touch anything."
Doug helped Greenberg and Bianca Rhee to wrestle the tall canister of nanomachines onto the platform of the little hopper. Then they began strapping it down. The rocket vehicle looked too frail to take the 4 of them, Doug thought, even in the moon's light gravity. The hopper was little more than a platform, with a podium for its controls and foot loops to anchor a half dozen riders. There was a fold-down railing, too, with attachments for tethers. To Doug, it looked like a great way to break your neck. Racing jet cycles seemed safer.
"Come on, come on," Brennard urged,
pushing between Rhee and Greenberg to help finish the strap-down.
"We don't have a moment to lose."
"Why the sudden rush?" Doug asked. "This isn't on the mission schedule."
"No, it's not," Brennard snapped. "But maybe Yamagata isn't waiting for our schedule."
"Yamagata? They've got a team here, too?"
"On its way," Brennard said.
"You're certain?" Doug probed.
"Certain enough.
Has it been confirmed by..."
"Who's in charge of this expedition, Stavanger? You or me?" Brennard bellowed.
His ears ringing, Doug said, "You are, of course."
"Then climb aboard and let's get going."
Doug dutifully stepped up the rickety little ladder and started to slide his boots into the foot loops alongside Brennard.
"Lift up the railings," Brennard ordered, "and see that everyone's safely tethered to them."
"Aye, aye, sir," said Doug snidely. Brennard paid no attention.
The tethers won't be much help.